The topic for this tonight's session is the church going bankrupt? So if this is not the flight that you want to be on, and this is not your destination, now is the time to deplane. First of all, let me say who I am. I am Steve Hitchcock, and after the introduction at tonight's supper, I realized that there was only one thing that Julia said that was correct, and she said that I am very, very successful. I went home, I went to the chalet and wrote the owner of the company that I work for and said, the program director at Holden said that I own the company and run it, and it's mine. So now's the time to get out. Now, I do work, I am executive vice president of Mal Warwick & Associates, which raises funds for nonprofit organizations and for political candidates. And for the very, very few of you who are interested in the esoteric business that we're in, which is namely direct mail fundraising, I have some copies of our newsletter. And if there are so many of you that are interested in that and I run out, let me know and I will see that you get on our mailing list forever and ever. I have a direct mail fundraising. I was asked earlier whether I see what I do as ministry, and yes, it is my expression of my calling in ministry. I enjoy it a great deal, and I'd be glad to talk to you, any of you, about it further. The other part of my life, the part that doesn't pay the mortgage but is equally enjoyable, is my involvement the last 9 years with an organization called New Models for Ministry, which was and still is an interdenominational effort, primarily with Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and Lutherans, to encourage and support and affirm ministry in daily life. And I've been pleased to be associated in many of ways with the evolution of ministry in daily life in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I do have copies, I think, enough of New Ministries, which is the newsletter that we publish. And so I thought I'd bring that along. And if you'd like to continue to receive copies of that newsletter, there's no obligation. If it's of interest to you, just print your name and address, and I'll see that you get on the mailing list for that. The reason I am here this week is to talk about ministry in everyday life and daily life. And I'm excited about that because it seems to me that this year's theme, treasure in earthen vessels, is what that kind of ministry is about. I think our calling as Christians is not to make the treasure, not even to discover that treasure, but to take the treasure that is there as our gift, to enjoy it, to celebrate it, to use it, as Luther would say, to hang on to it, to hold on to it for dear life. And if the way that that happens in my life, and I'll be glad to hear about it from you, is exactly in that embracing of the contraries, the embracing of the conflict, the chaos, and the confusion of daily life. That's where God is at work in my life and the life of all the Christians. One of the ways that happens is when we learn together. And it's always fun to come to Holden because we can learn from each other by disagreeing, by being confused together, by trying to muddle through some of the mysteries that we're not afraid to acknowledge. So the best way for me is to find out from you right from the get-go why in the world you came to this session, what it is that you want to get out of the answer to that question. So I can write these things down and they'll help us. What is it that brought you here?
Are we talking about the church body as a whole or individual congregation?
Good question. I'll abbreviate. Which is it? Who's going bankrupt, if anyone is?
Well, we're an individual congregation and we're going bankrupt.
Okay. There may be some reasons for that. What else? Why else are you here? What do you want to talk about? What's? Yeah,
I have
sure.
A growing concern about reports that I hear about the ELCA, for example, that we're in real big financial
Okay.
And a lot of programs are really hurting.
Okay, is the ELCA in trouble? Just out of curiosity, how many of you are members of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America? Okay. How many of you are members of the Missouri Synod? Okay. Of other denominations? Okay, good.
Yeah. A recent article in Lutheran talked about where are the men at the church, and is that the type of bankruptcy we're talking about, or are we only talking about finance?
Okay, good question. Yeah.
Changing forms of support
okay.
for the church and its ministry. Changing patterns would be a better word.
Okay, good. Changing patterns of support. What else about church and bankruptcy? Yes, please.
What is the church spending on benevolence or social ministries as compared to administration?
Very good. Yeah.
Effective means of achieving budget.
Okay.
Achieving budget.
Okay. Effective means. This guy wants some solutions. Enough of the problems. Okay. Noisy board. What else about this topic is of interest to you? Questions? Yeah.
Well, I'm just concerned about the spending priorities of the USCA with $38 million in mobility, and now are worried because they don't have money for programs.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Would that include, see, we can get money for special projects, but we can't get money for the salaries and utilities and so forth.
Special projects versus, yes. Good point.
I'd like to think about the spiritual dimension behind the financial bankruptcy.
Okay. Good point. Anything else? I can talk fast.
Can you solve all those problems?
Sure. Why not? I just thought of something. I didn't think it would be applicable, but maybe it will. Yes. So when we work with nonprofit organizations and with political campaigns, the reason that we've been hired usually is to help them grow. And I guess I hadn't thought about that in churches, and maybe that's a problem. But the way in which we look at our job as professional fundraisers, which is maybe applicable to this, is that our job is to look at the organization, and churches are organizations, as an isosceles triangle. Is that right? Isosceles is with the three. And that every organization has three, you're shaking your head.
Equilateral.
Equilateral. Thank you. That's why I have a calculator here. I'm not allowed to be near numbers or anything with math. The three challenges of any effort or organization are, does it have a vision and leadership? What is its overarching purpose for being? Secondly, in order to carry out that vision, in order to exercise that leadership and to conduct the programs that express that mission, every organization has to have some level of day-to-day operation. The way you expressed it very well is, oh, these spiritual special projects are fine, but somebody has to pay the utility bill. There has to be paper clips for most organizations. And in order for both of those, there have to be resources. And in our society, the primary resource is dollars. Now, the other one, obviously, is people. But you either need dollars to pay for those people, or you need dollars in order for them to be able, as volunteers, to to have the resources to do their job. So our task when we're working with an organization is to enable that organization to grow the triangle, if you will, in a somewhat equilateral fashion. There are lots of organizations, especially the type of clients that we work with, that have a gigantic vision. One of the presidential candidates we worked with had a very ambitious vision and had did not have the operations and did not have the resources for that. And obviously what happens to those kind of triangles is that they fall over. More typical, especially in the church, which is the crisis that the ELCA, in my opinion, is facing right now, is that they have lots of vision and they have lots of operation, but they don't have the resources to carry that out. So again, they have a very unsteady triangle, which in a difficult time is going to be blown over. There are, interestingly enough, there are lots of organizations out there in the mainstream that have lots and lots of resources, but they don't have any vision or purpose any longer, and they just sort of live on the momentum of the past. I don't have an opportunity to work with many of those. So the task is, as the vision and the leadership of an organization expands, the operations have to expand to carry that out, and the resources. Any questions about that? I just thought about it. Maybe it's totally off the point, or maybe it's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one to add to your list there is how we as a church can tie into some of those other groups that have large resources. To put our, you know, joint efforts.
And motivation of the giver.
Let's take a minute. I've spent most of my adult life as I finally have come to realize, as a business person, despite my training and predilection or tendency. And so I've had to learn how to read financial statements. I can't always add the figures right, but at least I understand the accounting process in general. What is the church going bankrupt? How would we decide that? What would be some of the indicators of a business or an organization in trouble? What are some of those?
Negative cash flow.
Negative cash flow. What are some of the others? Classic definition of bankruptcy is liabilities are greater than your assets. Okay? What are some of the other things that one looks for when a business or organization is in financial trouble? Cutting back. Right.
Poor morale.
That goes with loss of membership, too, doesn't it?
Okay, loss of membership or loss of participation. In business, they call it loss of market share. That means that more people are buying Round Table pizza than Domino's pizza. Some of the other things are the expenditure for capital investment goes down. That means that facilities aren't maintained, that money is not reinvested so that there is some future, and everything wears out, and so you have to have some program to reinvest that money. Payroll doesn't get met. Payroll gets cut back. Any other signs of bankruptcy? Okay. Decrease in leadership. One of the corollaries, or one of the things that happens, is that businesses that are in financial trouble have problems recruiting the kind of leadership or the top-notch staff or employees that can help them solve the problem. It's a catch-22 or a double whammy. Anything else? The other thing is that the expenses are greater than the income. Now, that's not the same as assets and liabilities, because there are lots of congregations in this country that have assets greater than their liabilities because of their past history. But there are also lots of congregations at this point that have expenses that are greater than their income. Well, Is the church going bankrupt? Let me just read you a news release, which I get from the ALCA. As I was saying to Jerry, I gave him 10 topics. This is the one I know the least about, but the one I care about the most. So, but I did manage to salvage this, and this is typical. ELCA reports 4.3 million first quarter deficit. 89-31-127, whatever that means. That's the Chicago. The treasurer of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has reported a continuing spending deficit for the church at the end of the first quarter of its second year of operation. ELCA Treasurer George E. Aker, forgive me if that's the wrong pronunciation, said that income for the first quarter of 1989 totaled $19.3 million and expenditures were $23.6 million. Let's just write that down here so I don't forget it. $23.6 and the income was how much? 19.3. Just so we can. Okay. Resulting in a net spending deficit of $4.3 million. The ELCA reported a deficit of $15.8 million in fiscal year 1988, which ended February 28, 1989. During the first quarter of fiscal year 1989, the 65 synods of the ELCA remitted $14,375,000 in proportionate share income. Bear with all of this. Quote, careful study of the receipts by months shows approximately $940,000 of additional normal monthly contributions not received during the same report period, Aker said, end quote. Quote again. Calls are being made to synods to encourage them to provide regular monthly remittance of their targeted percentage of unrestricted income from congregations. The actual giving for the first quarter is below the amount necessary to fund the 1989 budget, Aker said. Conscientious efforts must be made for timely receipt of funds to maintain liquidity within the operating fund for the ELCA, end of quote. Additional unrestricted income sources provided $993,000 for the quarter, bringing total unrestricted receipts to $15,254,000. Restricted income was slightly in excess of $4 million. What does all of that mean? Trouble. It means trouble. Pardon?
Also means they need a PR firm.
They need a PR firm. It's not a very helpful way to present it, is it?
No.
I think that one of the challenges will be in the months ahead is to see whether or not the church can communicate. This is a good way to start and say, yes, the church is in trouble. Certainly at the national level, the church is in trouble. It's not just the ELCA. There's a big controversy in the United Church of Christ about moving from New York to Cleveland. The real issue behind the move to Cleveland is what?
Money.
It cost about 10 times as much for the United Church of Christ to operate in the city of New York as it will in the city of Cleveland, supposedly. Obviously, the Episcopalians have been selling property. The Presbyterians are in trouble. If you read these, and I've not kept them in any systematic fashion, but I do read, almost every national church body is experiencing some sort of financial difficulty. But let's try to get behind that and say, what is it that's happening? Can we learn anything? Is there some treasure in these earthen vessels of the problems that the national church bodies? And then let's spend a little bit of time then moving to the issue of what does that have to do with congregations, since so many of us live in and have our being in congregations. Why is the ELCA having trouble? And why are the United Church of Christ, etc.? Well, if you could listen carefully, what did Mr. Aker say?
The The church is not sending money.
Ah! It's not that there's not money, it's just that it's not getting to Chicago. He very politely said the synods are not coughing up their fair share. Okay?
Some of the synods aren't getting it from the local congregation.
Okay. Okay.
It's because there's a loss of membership.
Okay. Let's ask that question again. Is there a loss of membership? We don't know. Could be.
Budgets for the program are developed from the top down. The program budget was developed and then the expectations created.
Okay. Very good point. They didn't ask me. Did they ask you? Okay.
I think there's less commitment to the new church body than they hoped for.
Okay.
Top heavy administration. Administration is too heavy.
Okay, I'm writing all these things down. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. Top heavy. And so if you feel it's not that, you tell me it's something different, and we'll put it down too. We can have two different
points. Another point of view on that.
Sure.
That it's understaffed.
Yes. Okay.
And underpaid.
Understaffed. And underpaid.
At what level?
Yeah.
At the national church body level.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we're trying to make simplistic a very complicated situation here.
Okay, that's good.
And no, I want to make a point and say
sure.
that ownership takes time, and we have a new church body, and it's going to require patience. It is indeed true the church is not top-heavy, it's just the opposite. There's an enormous amount of planning and implementation of mission on a synodical level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which is not Chicago. There is hardly anybody in Chicago in comparison to the former church body.
Right. It needs to be said, the national church body is actually smaller than if you added all the two... Put the two church body staffs together and forget about the third one. The new staff is actually smaller than the addition of those two. Okay?
I'm not Lutheran, but
that's okay. This is the same.
The denomination I am is having the same problem.
Yes.
And it's
sure.
not new, but it's they're facing the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
The money is not coming in. To the denominational headquarters the way they
right.
like to see it.
Historically, though, when churches merge like the ELCA did, you don't come in the first year with the same amount of money that the two bodies had the previous year.
Right.
So this is kind of history playing itself out a little bit, too.
Yes, 1 + 1 does not equal 2.
Plus there was debt that came into the merger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I think you should have a smaller staff because the others were duplicating what they were each doing. So therefore, you would not have a double amount because by combining it, you wouldn't need 4 people to do something 2 people can do.
Right. Yeah, there was no
one
reason.
One of the purposes of merging.
Right, that was the purpose of merging. But it's not to say, I think the point that the gentleman was making is it's not just that we have an overblown church bureaucracy, overstaffed. 2 different points of view, both of which could be right. Other reasons. What else is... Why isn't the money going upstream? I mean, even given this fact, I mean, that ownership takes time, this was a trend or phenomenon that occurred before the merger. It's occurring in every... What's causing that?
You think that a lot of it is that there's increased cost in local operations?
Yes.
Also increased interest in giving your money designated to specific purposes. And the closer to home those purposes are, the more fun it is to give.
Okay.
And I think there's a sense in the congregation's part that if you send it off to the headquarters, it's sort of like lost money. If you don't see tangible results.
Okay.
Loss of trust.
Okay. Yes.
Unpopular social issues where you don't want your money going to a certain group or.
Plus, I'm afraid that too many people, when the designated programs come out, instead of that being an additional gift, it's, well, I give $20 a week, so now I'm going to give 10 here and 10 here. I still give the 20, but I've designated 10 of it to a special project instead of it being an extra 10.
Yes.
So they take away from the utility payment.
Can I say that the inelasticity of charitable giving? There's some reasons for that that we can look at a little
bit later. The problem is individual giving last year in the ELCA rose. Individual member giving rose 4.6%. Congregational giving to synods and churchwide dropped 3.6%. So it's not in the member, the individual, that the problem is. It's getting it from the congregation to the wider church.
Right. So the church isn't going bankrupt. Well, I mean, there's certainly there's, you said there's more.
No, I don't think the church is going bankrupt.
Yes, please.
But yeah, and that's true, what Barbara said, good statistic. It's also true, I was just reading today in an article, that mainline Protestant members have not contributed a larger share of their income over the last 25 years. It has not changed.
Right.
2.2%,
yep.
And the Lutheran Church is 1.7%.
Why is that?
That has not changed in 25 years.
Why do you suppose that is?
That hasn't changed in American society since 19... We don't know why.
Why do you know why? Anybody has any suspicions why, or has anybody thought about that? Why do you think that happened? Isn't that an important thing that... the patterns of giving haven't changed in 25 years in mainline Protestant churches?
Probably because we've just grown enough, and there were enough people coming here from overseas to enlarge our church, so that there wasn't a crisis. Now, maybe God uses a crisis to open our eyes to see what we must do, and not only to survive, but to embrace mission.
It's a, you know, since the end of the Depression, the end of the 1930s, charitable giving in America has stayed absolutely static as the percentage of annual income. It fluctuates in a statistically insignificant amount. Which
I've
is
seen that same article, however, and I think the point, or some articles, I think the point is that articles that I've read is that there are churches and denominations in which are experiencing increases in individual giving. Not the mainline Protestant churches, but other Protestant churches in this country that are seeing an increase in individual giving, far above this 2.7% that's been referred to.
Two-thirds of all congregations started since 1979 describe themselves as either conservative or very conservative, and there are very few Lutheran parishes that do that. Most of them will just self-describe themselves as moderate. And so the growth has been in are described as conservative and very conservative, and that's where giving has increased. But that's also part of a larger sociological phenomenon, that people in those are also part of an expanding middle class, if you will. There are people moving from the lower middle class to the middle class and the upper middle class, and during that time of acceleration, especially people who are attached to conservative religious communities would understandably be giving more of their income.
Plus, at least in my own home congregation, I challenge people in our congregation to give more, which newer congregations do that constantly, maybe even excessively, but to challenge people in the congregation, it's either, oh, I don't want to talk about it, or how dare they bring that up here in, you know, the sanctuary. And I think that we miss the boat by not challenging each other openly.
Yes.
The fact that the people are giving, but the money's not going into the upper echelon, could that be caused partly by the electronic ministry's recent escapades that have...
Sure, it's taken its toll.
I guess it's part of this larger question of trust. I think that one of the reasons that that is happening is related to this, but it's also related to a very pragmatic and understandable phenomenon, is the cost of maintaining a local congregation. And maybe this is a good point to make the shift from the plight of the national church body to look at where many of us spend a lot of our time and energy, and that's at the local congregation. I've been pushing this not just with poor church people, but everywhere I go, because I think it's one of the most important documents that I've seen in a long time for Americans, from all aspects of American society. It's a study by the independent sector, conducted for the independent sector by the Gallup organization, called From Belief to Commitment. And it's a study of the 294,000 congregations in the United States. And one of the things that I think about my job is that it gives me an opportunity to associate not just with mainline Protestants, but with Christians in general. And reading a study like this gives you some sense of perspective. It's not cheap, but it's worth it. And I think there's also an inexpensive way just to get the summary. There have been lots of suggestions. One of the most important characteristics, though, and why the ELCA is in trouble and why other mainline denominations, is that the flow of money upstream, that money is not going to the Synod and then to the national church body. What is it that congregations are spending their money on? Let's try to spend some time. Where is that money going, and what kind of shifts have taken place? Yes?
Well, I think an enormous amount of congregational money is being spent on health care. For instance, there are 3 pastors on our staff.
Yes.
Just for the health care part of our budget, it's about $12,000 a year. That's an enormous amount of money. Just to give you another statistic, in a Ford motor car that costs $14,000, there's $805 in that car for the health benefits of the worker, and $406 for the steel in the car. So we have an enormous national problem in escalating health care.
Yes.
That's impacting congregations. But that's just one.
Yeah. Place. I mean, the company I work for, we provide medical coverage. It's an incredible part of our total operation.
And it seems to me that the measure of success of many churches seems to be how large a plant they can have,
okay,
rather than full utilization of what they do have.
Okay, operating plant. What else besides health care? What's the other change that has happened for many congregations?
Mortgage interest and the price of land.
Okay.
Debt service.
Yeah, I think we've been sort of like the credit card situation. You know, the congregation is borrowing as much money as they possibly can, and then they have this awful debt of interest.
Okay.
I don't know where we got the idea that we should all be building new churches in the last generation, but we sure, I think overbuilt just as many overbuilt their private homes or overindulged in credit cards.
Right.
It's all a part of that same thing.
I think that's true, which is part of a larger trend in society that we'll talk about more. When my mother and father had children, and lots of other mothers and fathers had children, and we thought that the baby boom was the way life was going to be, and it didn't work out that way. The baby boom stopped.
There's another philosophy, I think, that we can take an unbusinesslike approach to something, and that God will provide.
Okay. What's the other? I think that that's part of it. But there's one other very practical thing that's happened in the past, and I don't know the exact date. Those of you who are, I mean, I'm just too much out of touch. What do congregations have to pay that they didn't used to have to pay?
Salary.
Pensions and Social Security. Right?
Not for the pastor.
Not for the pastor, but for all the other employees. They now have to start paying Social Security. But pensions are another.
And haven't salaries gone up some in terms
yep.
of the level of pay for pastors?
Oh, yeah.
sometimes. Sometimes they're lower. But in general, I think they're higher for a variety of reasons, especially at entry level, because there has been an effort to try to pay a livable wage to those people who are entering. So you no longer have these young people coming out of seminaries who are exploited for the first 4 or 5 years of their life, if you want to use that word, or who are trained in the first 4 or 5 years. Many of them are entering later in life, and they have lots of financial obligations, and they can't live on nothing in the middle of Iowa. What else is happening? Yes?
Congregations, as well as all other kinds of institutions in the U.S., are paying for services now that used to be provided by volunteers.
Okay. Why is that?
Two-income families.
Okay, two-income families.
Isn't a lot of this related to lack of commitment on the part of all of us? I mean, how many tithe anymore? A real lack of commitment.
That may be. It is interesting that the citing of the conservative churches that are growing, it's the conservative churches are less likely to have pledge programs than our mainline moderate and liberal congregations. And those ones without pledge programs are those congregations that are experiencing a growth in giving. Again, that's a very complex issue, but it is interesting to me. Commitment can take lots of different forms.
Unemployment problems in communities mean that people aren't paid. They don't have the money to pay and support their families.
I'm not an expert on the United States budget, but one of the things that has happened for local congregations, not only have the unemployment, but it's some phenomenal percentage. 87% of the 294,000 congregations report an increase in human service programs that are not directly church related. As most of you know, the churches have borne the brunt of feeding the hungry and caring for the homeless that have been created by the shift in our national priorities at the national budget level. As someone said, the homeless just didn't drop from the sky for the churches to take care of. There was a reason that people became homeless. So that congregations are spending more money at the local level for those kind of social programs. What all that means is that congregations are now spending 74%, almost three-quarters of their annual budget. And just to give you some sense of proportion about that, from the national average is $178,000 per congregation. That's their sort of annual budget. Of course, that's like statistics. You know, the person drowned in an average depth of 6 inches. So you have to be careful, but it's a meaningful figure. So, yes. Interestingly enough, after that 74%, the next big component is 17% goes to other organizations. That's about $8.4 billion. This is a big deal. Congregations are responsible for almost $50 billion in charitable contributions. Now, 74% of that gets recycled into their own, but still $8.4 billion goes to other organizations.
Does it include other organizations?
That's a good question. Thank you. What are those other organizations? $5.5 billion goes to denominations, so that still the overwhelming majority of money goes to the denomination. So maybe the church isn't going bankrupt. Barbara's right. $5.5 billion, that's a lot.
Crisis networks take money from our church and contribute to that.
Right, that's right. Of that, after that, $1.9 billion are given by churches to charitable organizations. Now, just to give you some sense of perspective on that, let me see if I get my... Charitable giving in the United States is approximately $100 billion. Of that, $90 billion comes from individuals. And so you can see that includes the $50 billion from congregations. So that's there. Now, where does the other come from? $5 to $6 billion comes from foundations, like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and $4 to $5 billion comes from corporations. These two used to be neck and neck, and as corporations have merged and as they've rediscovered that profit, the bottom line, corporations have been giving a declining percentage of money to charitable causes. So that you can see that the $1.9 billion that churches are giving to charitable causes other than denominations is almost half of what all the corporations in the United States are giving to charitable causes. So the congregations are an incredibly powerful force in our society for doing that. And this does that $1.9 billion doesn't include all the local congregational efforts at feeding, at all the other local daycare programs, etc. So the churches are giving almost $2 billion to other organizations. And if you're interested in how that breaks down, let me know. There is an addition. Congregations are giving $1 billion to individuals directly in direct assistance of some support of some kind, which is what we were talking about, feeding and homelessness and other issues. Well, excuse me just a second. I don't want to trip on my shoelace. Any questions about this? Does this have any correspondence to your own experience of reality at the local level? This is all nice for me to say this is what's happening, but is it happening for you at the local level? Where are congregations spending money? That's what I was surprised about, which relates to my question, are the churches in trouble? Churches are not spending money, by and large, on the future. That's a pretty simplistic statement, but the major way in which a business looks like that, are they buying new equipment? Are they buying new, making capital outlays? A very small percentage, if you add the 74% and the 17%, and then you add the direct assistance to individuals, there's not much left for capital outlays. I think there's a time bomb out there, and someone said that there are all these churches. Not only are they being invested in, but they have to be cared for and replaced. And apparently, if you read these national statistics, that's not happening. There's not very much. In our business, we think of spending 10 to 15%, reinvesting 10 to 15% of our annual income in creating a future for ourselves. So at one level, the church is not doing that. Yes, please.
Good rule of thumb is that a congregation that is looking toward the future should spend at least 5 to 6% of the basic budget for outreach in terms of advertisement and,
sure.
and creative evangelism. And I think it probably works out to be 1%.
Yes. Yeah, certainly in our, again, the standards that we would use for nonprofit organizations are much larger. We look at 10, 15, and 25% if an organization wants to grow and reach out. Yes?
We aren't planning for the future in that we're not training additional workers to go into the ministry. There's a shortage of students now.
Yes.
They're the Missouri Center.
Yes.
A major problem.
And this then makes the university, the cost of each education more when you have fewer students. And so you have to start cutting back on your professors and so on.
Again, I'm not up to date on all. I mean, I used to be, and I apologize for, I just haven't had the luxury of keeping up to date on what the the ELCA figures, but I don't, I think that's a leveling off of enrollments, and actually, in some cases, certainly in PLTS, there's a decline in enrollment and the average cost. Yes?
Also, our people are moving, but the churches, the main line, are established and rooted in one place, and they don't tend to follow the people, like pizzas and banks and all the others.
Right. It's pretty scary. How many of you are clergy? And I've heard some statistics lately, or just anecdotal reports, about how many people have Lutheran, traditional, native-born, or whatever the phrase is. With a name like Hitchcock, I'm obviously not a, a Lutheran from nationality. But most of the people who are in churches are not Lutherans because they were born Lutherans. It's because that was the most convenient church. My parents moved. They went to the same Lutheran church for 46 years, and they moved to San Luis Obispo. And now they don't attend a Lutheran church. And for them, it was not a big crisis issue. They're just going to what is the most convenient, congenial church. Well, I don't. Do we have any time? Yes, we do have some time. Let's. Yes.
Well, we were talking about what we weren't investing in. My local congregation doesn't like to invest in adults.
Uh-huh.
They'll spend money for kids, Sunday school, but when it comes to adult programs, it's pulling teeth to get any money at all.
Uh-huh. That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah. I complain every year.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, are there some solutions? Again, obviously we've got 1 hour, and we can't deal with everything in 1 hour, but we can at least lift up some possibilities, and that's the fun part about being at Holden. You don't have to have all the answers. You can have part of the answers or the beginning of answers. Are there some solutions? One of them is to complain. She's going to complain in her church, in her local congregational meeting. Yeah.
Staff person from Chicago at an executive level here a couple of weeks ago was saying she wished the truth were being told out of the National Church, that information was being managed.
Gee, Jerry, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
Careful study of the receipts, but okay, yes, I think that there is a communication problem.
Yeah.
Certainly it's a complex issue. But there are lots of, the world of business has figured out how to take complex issues and to communicate those to people. Yeah. What?
One of the biggest ones is education on stewardship.
Okay.
And what it is.
I don't think the memberships are growing.
Okay.
Our membership in the churches aren't growing yet this year.
Okay, deal with membership. That's a big issue, but it is one that there is a correlation between membership size and growth of membership. It's very interesting in this study, most of the moderate and liberal congregations expected to either stay the same or grow only slightly. Interestingly, those same congregations expected only a small increase or no increase in the level of financial support. I think it's a case where we expect to have a declining membership. We expect to have declining resources. And gee, just guess what happens? That's what you get.
That's right. Yeah. So that really goes back to vision.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's true. I think that's the spiritual dimension. We need, my point of view from fundraising is that you need a resurrection mentality when it comes to raising money. You have to expect that new life is bursting out all over, that there are new possibilities. Americans are spending 2% of their annual income, even church-going people, 2% of their annual income on giving. That leaves 98% untouched. And what are they spending it on? VCRs, etc. I'd like to compete against that anytime. But so, vision. What else? What are there other solutions? What are the ways to deal with this issue? I do think that both at the national level and at the local level, and perhaps even more. The parish I belong to doesn't even have a balance sheet. Now, that may not sound like heresy to you, but I think that's bad stewardship, not to even have a balance sheet, not to know what your assets are and not to see how those assets are changing from time to time. I think the national church body obviously has a budgeting problem if they aren't able to match expenditures and income. And that's hard work. I mean, that means that some people are going to have to develop some skills that they don't have now, and it may be pretty boring. It will be pretty boring. But I think that's part of our responsibility.
I have to laugh at the attitude of some in our church. When we see the budget, it seems like it's large enough to take care of everything, but there's not that much money coming in. Somebody will say, oh, we'll get it.
Okay.
I don't know if they will or not, but it doesn't look like they're always getting it.
I think what you're suggesting is that every parish, every synod, and every denomination has to have concrete or specific plans about how the money is going to come in. And then after they do that, they should all cut those plans by 50%, because reality has a way of tricking us. And that's certainly what we do with our clients. And then we go back and say, look, it's not going to work perfectly. Now what else are you going to do to reach your goal? You know, we've all said in organizations where you're 50,000 or 5,000, doesn't matter what the figure is, short of what you need. And so somebody says, well, we'll just raise more money, or we'll have a fundraising committee. That's not a specific plan.
I wonder if the church needs to develop its gifted people with the gifts who have a vision and leadership that can touch people and think in resurrection terms about giving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if the ELCA, for example, were to train a cadre of people, gifted people. I mean, they have those gifts.
Mm-hmm.
They travel around the country, they speak to people about with a resurrection mindset,
mm-hmm,
on giving.
There is a group that exists. Was it, tell me, is it Laity and?
Lutheran
Laity.
Yeah, Lutheran Laity. Is that the fundraising group?
Hello.
Thank you very much. That's, I think, a very effective group, but it's a very small group, and it tends to be narrowly focused on some traditional forms of fundraising and perhaps some more gifted visionary individuals in addition to this.
But LLM is mostly for capital fundraising,
right.
You know, not for ongoing,
right,
congregational budget.
Yeah, that's what I meant by traditional.
And I gotta say it again, because I'm not hearing it, and that is, we're talking here fundraising, and what we ought to be talking is stewardship.
Okay.
We don't raise funds in the church if our people are not committed giving, because it's a part of what's inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a bigger problem than what we've got now.
I think you're absolutely right. I'll get the last word. There, Bill Deal's book on In Search of Faithfulness, which is for sale in the bookstore, has a very good topic on one of the characteristics. He's got the characteristics of faithfulness, and one of them is how one gives and support. And I think his chapter is very good. I disagreed a little bit with it in the New Ministries, but I think it's worth reading about. I want to say, though, I think what the church desperately needs is more stewardship and more fundraising. Stewardship alone will not enable mainline Protestants to survive and thrive. Our society is now organized around fundraising and fund giving as a charitable activity, as part of an activity. If the church doesn't want to get on that, I think the church doesn't have an alternative but to get on that train. Now, I do think that stewardship and fundraising are different, and I'm going to talk about next week what that difference is. If you want to know what it is this week, you can yank me by the arm. Yes, please. In general, both within churches and in with American society, the percentage of income that people are giving is the same. The factor that you point to is a very important one, namely in the baby boomer generation in which I exist. That's people 27 through 45, is that right? Those folks are earning less than their parents earned, and their housing costs are substantially higher than their parents. So therefore, they do have less discretionary income. So that is a factor that's
so
affected.
We're talking about
that the challenge, I think, is a resurrection challenge. How do you move beyond the norm in American society, which is that 2%? What is it that we can say, do, believe, and act on that will break that 2%? The independent sector is talking about giving 5% because they know that that's also the challenge, not only to churches, but to American society in general.
Do you feel that the conservative government has that resurrection
Gift? Yeah, I think the resurrection appears in lots of places, and that's one of the places. Yeah, they're also tied in to a very important, strong sociological phenomenon, which is the transformation or the movement of the lower middle class to middle class and upper middle class.
I grew up in one of those churches, and tithing was definitely emphasized.
Right.
It was just an expectation that people would tithe.
Please.
Well, I don't know if we want to repeat or model ourselves on them, because isn't it true that those churches, it's high giving for short periods of time, and the turnover in the churches that call themselves conservative or evangelical is much higher than our turnover. And so we make some decisions about, do we want people in for 3 years, you know, get a bunch of money out of them, and then have them go on their way once they've settled into the next class they've come into? Or do we
want to
be more creative with what we have?
I'd like to be more creative. Yes.
What you're saying is many of these young conservative churches have not stood the test of time. Many of them are 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, a denomination, a church. My friend Lyle Schauer, a very well-known person in the United States in church sociology, says he thinks that every church ought to self-destruct after 25 years.
And some of them do.
Some of them do. But to emphasize this, new churches that are started from scratch, Lutheran churches, mm-hmm. before they can enter into a building program, they have to be given 5% of their income to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the building goes on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the giving is 2.5 times what it is in our longer established churches.
Right. Well,
the fact that during the Reagan years, okay, so much of poverty and such was laid on the churches,
mm-hmm.
isn't that been a factor?
Yes. I think that as churches are spending more of their budget on direct assistance to individuals and on programs that are designed for humanitarian efforts. That's just... they have borne a disproportionate share of that burden.
And I guess what makes me angry is that money is going for, quote, security.
Well, as the Lutheran Senator Paul Simon said, a $1 billion decrease in the defense budget doubles the education budget of our country. You guys have a chance to vote. Thank you very much. This has been fun.